this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some fascinating guests lined up. In the first half, we have Martin Lindstrom, and he's the author of Ministry of Common Sense, just right for our time. And then we have in the second half, Dr. Sanam Hafiz on addictions. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
New experimental vaccines could stop the worst effects of synthetic fentanyl and carfentanil, two drugs that have been major drivers of the opioid epidemic in the U.S., according to a new study published in ACS Chemical Biology last week. During several experiments in mice, the vaccines prevented respiratory depression, which is the main cause of overdose deaths. The vaccines also reduced the amount of drug that was distributed to the brain. Once in the brain, synthetic opioids prompt the body to slow down breathing, and when too much of the drug is consumed, breathing can stop. Fentanyl is up to 100 times stronger than morphine, and carfentanil, which is often used by veterinarians to sedate large animals such as elephants, is up to 10,000 times stronger. Nearly all American adults get some vegetables every day, but the old apple-a-day adage is falling out of favor, a new government survey suggests. Researchers found that a full 95% of U.S. adults said they ate some amount of vegetables on any given day. On the other hand, only about two-thirds said the same of fruit, down significantly from 20 years ago. Experts called the finding on vegetables an encouraging sign and a bit of a surprise. But the survey looked only at any consumption of produce and not whether Americans were eating recommended amounts each day. The federal government's dietary guidelines for Americans call for adults to eat about 2 to 3 cups of vegetables per day. The United Kingdom says it has launched the world's first study on whether giving a person different COVID-19 vaccines in a two-dose regimen is safe and provides more protection against the coronavirus. 800 people over 50 years old will be given the Oxford AstraZeneca and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines in different combinations and different intervals, the UK Department of Health and Social Care said in a news release. If vaccine mixing works, it would give health authorities a new advantage in fighting the pandemic that has killed more than 2.3 million people worldwide, including 110,000 in the United Kingdom. Currently, UK health authorities, the CDC, and the World Health Organization do not recommend vaccine mixing. If you had a heart attack or a stroke, you might want to stock up on green tea. New research from Japan finds survivors who drink plenty of green tea may live longer lives. Stroke survivors who drank at least 7 cups per day were 62% less likely to die during the study period versus non-drinkers. Similarly, the risk was cut by 53% among heart attack survivors who downed that much tea. Green tea was not the only beverage tied to longer life. For heart attack survivors, as well as people with no cardiovascular problems, moderate coffee intake was also linked to better survival. The coffee benefit did not extend, however, to stroke survivors. The study was published February 4th in the journal Stroke.
We have Martin Lindstrom with us today, and he's the author of The Ministry of Common Sense, a humorous yet practical 5-step guide to ridding ourselves and companies of bureaucratic bottlenecks and red tape. Welcome, Martin.
Well, thanks for being on your show.
It's so good to have some common sense written up so we can all find a good read during this time.
Absolutely. I mean, I told you the other day I went on a plane. I wanted to go to Paris. And as I was sitting on the plane, this announcement was taking place on the speakers. And the guy basically says, "Welcome on board on this plane heading for Paris. I regret to inform you that all cabin service has been completely suspended on the entire flight. And by the way, the laboratories have been blocked because of COVID-19. And so this is what's going on in our world. We use COVID-19 as a blanket excuse for reducing service and reducing costs, and of course bringing even more nonsense into our world. So I tell you, the time we're living in right now, common sense is on a big thread at the moment.
And being able to keep your sense of humor and common sense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have to tell you this story. So continuing my little flight story, they've introduced a new format of entertainment on board. You know, in the old days we had these entertainment systems. Well, now they have another way of doing it. It's called a track and trace contact form. And there is 2 questions on it right now. The first question is, have you been in close proximity with anyone over the last 12 hours you don't know? And the only thing you just have to do is to look to your right and there's a person sitting there and get her phone number right. And the second question is even worse. It asks, have you taught anything anyone has taught over the last 12 hours? Well, guess what? The one and single pen was now circulated through the entire plane. Well, that's the one you're touching as you fill out that form. So this is where we are right now, 2021, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be able to keep humor and common sense in it, the other option is to totally get uptight and freak out about the whole thing.
It is. But, you know, here's the issue with it. You know, common sense, as I've discovered when I wrote the book, The Minister of Common Sense, is directly correlated with empathy, the ability to place yourself in the shoes of another person and feel what that person is feeling. And here's the issue. As we increasingly live in a social media world, we see the world from our point of view. We don't care about what other people's views are. And that's the reason why I claim in my new book that empathy is in an existential crisis at the moment. And, of course, the side product of that is that common sense is slowly disappearing as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've broken your book into, basically a 5-step guide. Can you kind of go over that and let us know how the book works?
Yeah, again. Well, I think the first point is really to understand the human psychology of why we behave the way we do. And I think the best way of illustrating that is to take you back to an experiment conducted some years ago. Now, chickens were put into a cage, stuck there for half a year. And one day they're let out on the beautiful green grass. The sun was shining. The birds were singing. And guess what happened? The chickens went out, and after 30 seconds, they went straight back in again. And I call that the chicken cage syndrome. It really is the idea of that we are really concerned about changes in our life because we're afraid of the unknown. And therefore, as we have to change our behaviors in a company or an organization, you will notice it's extraordinarily difficult because we always will bounce back to our default behavior. Which leads me to the second point. What we learned now is in order to really bring back common sense, you need to adopt this sense of empathy. And you can do that by seeing the world through a customer's point of view or an employee's point of view. So one of the experiments we've done is to, of course, do a undercover boss type of experiment where the CEO suddenly sees the world through a person sitting in the reception. Or we've done other experiments where we've taken the key employees into homes of customers to see the world through their point of view. And I think some of the biggest leaders and entrepreneurs we've seen in the world, they all had that in common, that they actually saw the world through the customer's point of view. I mean, many years ago, I had the chance of meeting up with the founder and the owner, the late Ingvar Kamprad of IKEA. Mm. And I remember when I met up with him, he was sitting at his cash register, checking every customer out. And I said to him during the break, "Why do you do it?" And he said to me, "Because I want to look every customer in the eyes and see the world through their point of view and feel what they're thinking." And that's really what I'm talking about in the book. I'm talking about how you adopt another person's point of view and suddenly start to see where the frictions are, where the stupidities are, or what I call the nonsense, which is, of course, the opposite of the common sense idea, right?
Which is allowing everyone to be seen and everyone to be heard.
Absolutely. It is the idea of realizing that the fact that we see the world from one point of view is not necessarily the best you can do. I mean, time after time when we've looked at simple examples around the world, they always have failed because there was one point of view on it. I'll give you an example. For example, if you take a look at the fire exits we have in every major office building, the exit sign is always on the top near the ceiling, right?
Right.
Well, why is it? I mean, think about it. Where does smoke go? It goes up, right?
Right.
So right, and people kind of not crawling at the ceiling, right? They're crawling at the floor to get out of there. But why is the fire exit not down at the floor level, which is exactly what we introduced many years ago in Sweden? But the idea of seeing it through that lens was extraordinarily difficult when it was introduced originally because people were afraid of the consequences, even though it made plain, simple sense. And that's what I'm talking about here. Always see the world from a different point of view.
Mm-hmm. How do you get to that? How do you work with a lot of bosses and a lot of companies? How do you get them to see it in a more global view?
Well, I think the best example I can give you is when one of our larger pharma clients reached out to me about 2 years ago, and they're the largest player in the respiratory field segment. And they said to me, hey, how do we get closer to our patients? And I said, well, how often do you speak with the patients? And they said, never. I said, never? Why? They said, well, because compliance will not allow us to do that. So we reached out to compliance. We persuaded them to give us permission to go into the patients' homes. And a couple of weeks later, I went into some patient homes attended by some senior executives from this pharma company. Now, here's what happened. As we go into a home of a 28-year-old lady having asthma her whole life, I sit down with her and I ask her a question. I said to her, listen, how was it? How did it feel like to have asthma as a child? And she starts to cry. And she explained for me that she was teased in school. She has no friends. She was a disgrace for human mankind. And I'm quoting her right now when she was invited to parties. And I said to her, listen, it seems like you've kind of recovered since then. What happened? And she grabs her handbag and she pulls out a straw. And she said, this is what I give to my friends and new colleagues. I asked them to breathe through the straw for a minute while holding themselves for the nose. And she said, this is the way I exchange a sense of empathy. So I took that idea, and we asked senior management at this pharma company to do exactly that. Switched off the light, had everyone breathe through the straw, and after 30 seconds, one executive spits out the straw and said, this is ridiculous. No one can breathe like this.
Yeah.
And I look him in the eyes, and I say, this is how your patients feel every minute of their entire life. And suddenly you could hear a penny drop on the floor, and the whole company changed. And that's what I'm talking about, bringing in empathy into that competence into the organization.
So there's that emotional buy-in connection so that you feel like you really need to make it good for everybody.
Well, yes. When you see numbers on a spreadsheet, it does not resonate with you as much as if you feel things. Mm-hmm. Once you feel things, you become a person which is a member of a movement for change, and suddenly you become passionate around it. And I think it's fair to say that any larger movements in the world have all started not from top down, but from bottom up, one person at a time, convincing more people to join a new behavioral change of a mindset. And I think in companies, a lot of executives are left with the impression that whatever instructions they give, it will cascade throughout the organization. What I've learned is, yes, to some extent you can kind of give a mandate, but then it's time to take the express elevator down to the ground floor and work with people at that level to give them a voice, to find the frictions at that lower level, and then show a change different levels rather than senior management levels. Once people in the organization see firsthand, wow, there's changes happening among people which never would change normally, then suddenly hope is generated. And with that, you can then start an internal movement.
Mm-hmm. So when you go in and help companies, you're helping them with a mission that can affect everyone and a vision that can affect everyone in the company?
Well, absolutely. I think in the end of the day that it comes back to company culture. And company culture is the ability to give everyone a feeling of that change actually is worth happening and in fact, it's possible to make a change happen. If you only have a small exclusive group which is armed with the change card, I think the rest in the organization more or less feel paralyzed. And I call that for the frozen middle. And quite often we see in very large organizations that you have a frozen middle. It's people would feel stretched to the bone, they're cut to the bone. There's no energy left. They have to produce endless stuff, but no one's giving them credit for it. So what I typically see happening in these large organizations is that people just parade orders, but their soul is not there anymore. And in fact, they try to avoid making change happen, which comes back to the chicken cage syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll tell you a story, a quick one.
You know what? We're going to go to a quick break, and then as soon as we come back, you can tell us this story, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hang on. We'll be right back.